Welcome to the Agile Agenda. I'm Annette Venelbo and I'm your host on this show. Today I have the great pleasure of introducing you to the last episode of this very special three-episode mini-series with a very special guest, namely the pioneer of the Kanban method, David Anderson. I'm extremely honored and grateful that David has taken the time out of his busy schedule to share some of his insights into the current state of Kanban with us. I guess that nobody on the planet would be in a better position to do just that. This is the third and the last episode in this series, and this time you can look forward to hearing David share his views on why some people are still reluctant to use Kanban. We'll talk about the future of Kanban as David looks into his crystal ball. And last but not least, David will share his recommendations on what to consider when you decide to go agile. David, although I'm certain that most of our listeners know you already, there might be a few that don't. So, could I once again ask you to give a brief introduction of yourself before we start today's episode?
Hi, I'm David Anderson. I'm from Scotland. I've lived in Singapore and Ireland and the United States for about 23 years. And most recently, I moved here to Spain in 2018. I've been here for 5 years in Bilbao.
Yeah, thank you so much, David. Let me continue where I left off in the last episode. I left you with a cliffhanger when I asked my big question, but you had to wait for David's answer, and now is the time for that. Let's repeat the question and hear the answer. So, the big question, and I even got that quite a few times when I do my training, if the benefits of using Kanban, they are so significant, how come people don't drop whatever they're doing and then just jump over and start working with Kanban?
So it is a really great mystery. There could be several potential explanations. One that comes up repeatedly is people don't believe the results. They can come to a conference, they can see someone present results, and then they find a way of excusing it by saying, oh, that'll never work at our company, or they're very different from us.
We are so special.
Yes. Yeah. And they find a way of excusing it. They also believe that perhaps it required certain level of heroics, that somehow the company had the business equivalent of Lionel Messi playing on the team, and that this is why they got the great results. It wasn't the Kanban. I remember at one conference, there was an executive talking with me. He was basically saying this, and we were standing at the back of a session where there was a guy presenting a case study. I said, look, this guy here on the stage, he's just told everyone that they quadrupled the productivity of the organization. And none of our audience are excited about that. The reason is it's boring. At every conference, we have two or three guys just like him with case studies where they've quadrupled the productivity. So it turns out that that type of evidence doesn't persuade people. Then there's the related thing that if you're doing evolutionary change, it feels like that you can't point to any one reason for the improvements. And therefore, it's very difficult to attribute the benefit that it's just how we do things around here. It's our culture or whatever. However, I think the bigger issue with the Agile community has been that Agile has never really been about improving business or delivering value. It's essentially a big social club. It's a social movement. People want to be members of that movement. They need to conform to the social norms in that movement. And that conformity requires them to be essentially pious followers of Scrum and to stick within the parameters that allows them. So it hasn't been socially acceptable to be outside of that doing something different. And we've lived in a world for 20 plus years of very cheap capital which has allowed many companies around the world to be quite complacent and to be rich enough to be stupid and repeat mistakes, to do one agile transition that fails and then try another one and another one, and so on. I feel that the reason we've been so successful in Brazil is Brazilian companies aren't rich enough to be stupid. They demand results. And people in Brazil need to be able to produce results. So they come to Kanban because it's consistently producing results.
I think it's a really interesting perspective. And to be honest, I've seen a bit of what you've been talking about here, that you do one transformation and it doesn't really work. You do a second, so on and so forth. And what I've been wondering so many times is that how come people are willing to spend so many millions on big transformations without getting any sort of evidence that they're getting anything back? And another thing that I've been wondering, do you think that it might be managers that want to do big things? Rather, you were talking about evolutionary change just before, and that's maybe not as, and excuse me the wording, it may not be as sexy as doing a big agile transformation and a big...
Yes, absolutely. So in his book, Good to Great, Jim Collins talks about what he calls level five leaders. And level five leaders are humble leaders. And although it's a little bit of a coincidence, on our model, level five leaders are also the humble leaders. And a level five leader doesn't need the outcome to be attributed to them as a hero because they're humble. So level five leaders are quite happy with evolutionary change that produces great outcomes. They're quite happy to create an environment that will drive those changes. They don't need to be given the credit for the outcome. In a lower maturity organization with lower maturity leaders, those leaders often want to cast themselves as the heroes. And they want the great victories to be attributed to their heroic efforts. So I think it's natural that lower maturity organizations, the leadership, want to make grand gestures and to be seen to be the ones who implemented or drove those big initiatives, these grand gestures, so that the victory can be attributed to them. And fundamentally, why do we have the problems? Well, why spend so much money on an agile transition initiative and then no one seems to bother whether it produced any results? Fundamentally, that's a lack of accountability. And a lack of accountability is an attribute of low maturity organizations. Now, since I started talking about this more publicly over the last 5 years, the first thing, sitting in this office here in Bilbao, some of my staff said to me, David, how do you translate accountability? Because in Spanish, we would just say it's the responsible person. So there isn't a difference in Spanish between responsibility and accountability. And it turns out that that's also true in Portuguese, in German, in Russian, and we believe in most major languages in the world. There isn't a word for accountability. So the way we translate it for the Spanish and the Portuguese, which that's big markets for us, the Latino market, also here in Spain, all Spanish speaking, and the Portuguese Brazilian market. There's responsibility for doing the work, and accountability is the person responsible for the outcome. And the analogy we use is the 11 players on the field have to play the football match. They are responsible for playing the match, but the team manager is the one held accountable for the result. So low maturity organizations are often missing accountability. And without accountability, no one's questioning, why did we waste millions on an agile transition that didn't produce anything? Well, to have accountability, you need to have a feedback mechanism. And we're realizing that this is a very poorly understood concept. To have a feedback mechanism, imagine it's the heating system in your house. You walk up to the thermostat, you set it to 22 Celsius. Well, 22 Celsius is the target. And now your heating system runs the heating and it senses the temperature in the rooms. And if it's below 22, the heating continues to work until it detects we've reached 22, we've hit the target, turn the heating off. That's a feedback mechanism. Well, to have accountability, you need a feedback mechanism and you need objectives, some sort of target. You need to be able to measure the outcome we're achieving versus the objectives. And if there's a gap, the accountable person needs to show leadership and take action to close the gap. Well, if we started an Agile Transition Initiative and we funded it with millions of euros or pounds or dollars, what were the objectives? Did we define those? Do we have a feedback mechanism to compare the outcome with the objectives? And are we holding someone accountable for the results? And if all of that is missing, then stupid companies will continue to waste large sums of money on Agile initiatives.
And here I have a confession to make, because I've been working as an Agile coach for 15 years now, and I've been wondering exactly what you are talking about here, that nobody was asking me, and it is say, when we employ you on this project and you come in here as an Agile coach, we expect you to produce these results, any kind of results. I was never asked that question. What are you going to produce if you work for us here for the next 6 months or however long it takes? I was never asked that question. And I've been wondering again and again and again, how come people will be investing in me? I'm not saying that I'm not doing my job right, because I know that I am. But how come they never ask the question, what are you going to give me? If we pay you to be here for 6 months, what are you going to give me?
It is quite strange, isn't it? It feels like companies felt the need to be doing something. Maybe the Gartner consultants had been in at the senior level and they had been saying, so what are you guys doing about Agile? And they're like, what's that? Well, Agile's this thing all the other companies are doing. You should be doing it too. And then the following week, they hold a meeting with their subordinates who come in and, so we had Gartner in here last week, and Gartner told us we need to do Agile, so get on with it, make it so. And nobody actually asks why.
Exactly. Yeah. What do you want?
Now, in the days when my business wasn't just a pure play Kanban training business, and really what we do now is license the training around the world. So our business is training trainers and training consultants. But in the years before, when we still had direct clients, we would get emails and maybe a phone call, and the client would get on the call, and they would say, we want to do Kanban. And the first question out of my mouth was, why? You're contacting me because you want to do Kanban. Why? What are you trying to achieve? And what brought you to the conclusion that Kanban's the right answer? And if I can get them focused back on the outcome they want, what they want to achieve, then I can get them to understand, let's start where you are now and put in place mechanisms so your business can evolve and mature in a way that will deliver those outcomes. But bear in mind that we're going to be measuring progress towards the outcome. Now, of course, will Kanban be a significant part of that? Yes, of course it will. But it shouldn't be about we want to do Kanban. It has to be about that we want to achieve a certain outcome. There has to be a purpose. There has to be a reason why. And that's the place to start. And perhaps now that we're in a new economy where capital isn't cheap, and my guess is we're in this world for the next 20 years or so, at least, that's focusing minds, that senior executives are looking for, if I spend this money I've had to borrow from someone that I'm paying interest on, if I spend this money, what am I going to get for it?
Yeah, they're going to be interested in the outcomes more than we've seen for the past 10, 20 years.
I think quite possibly, yes.
Yeah. Well, you know, my Kanban heart is beating hard, so I'm really hoping that that's going to be the case, because I really love working with Kanban, and I hope that's going to be for the next many years. You have recently released a new version of your famous blue book. Can you tell us a bit about the new book?
Yeah, it started out with the intent to write a second edition, and then I realized that as a community, we've learned so much that I couldn't do it justice in a single book. So the idea is to have a series of books that we've called the Better with Kanban series. And the first of those is available now. And someone who's read the original Kanban book from 2010, they will recognize some of the case studies. They'll recognize some of the references. But it's much deeper than it was, deeper in terms of the storytelling, but also deeper in terms of the insights. And one of the key insights that you'll find in the book that wasn't in the previous one is Kanban coaching and leadership is about trying to achieve an outcome in an indirect or oblique manner. So just last week, I was at the Agile Spain conference. I was speaking with an English guy who lives in Barcelona, and he was showing me a Kanban board design from his company. And it had a little bit of upstream stuff with business analysis. Then it had some development and testing and some acceptance thing in the downstream. But the development part of it was just one column that said in progress. And he said, you know, I've been trying to get people to recognize that we should have a done, so that when something's finished, we can put it in the done. And I said, yes, of course. Then it has a signal to pull it into the test. And without that, you don't have the pull signal. He said, yeah, but every time I try to persuade people, I get shot down. And I said, well, the problem is you're hitting it head on. You know that you need this as a way of driving improvement. No one else has bought in. They need to discover it for themselves. You need to set up the circumstances so that they come to the conclusion, we don't have enough information here. We need to be able to signal when something is complete and is pullable. And that will lead to an evolution in the board design, maybe with the done call. So he said, well, how would you do that? And I said, well, our basic formula for evolutionary change is there must be a stressor in the environment. Without some stress, there's no motivation. There needs to be a feedback mechanism, and there needs to be an act of leadership. These are the three elements in the formula. So what's your stressor? Well, perhaps it's a service level agreement. It's a lead time for how long things should take. And your feedback mechanism might be a service delivery review where you compare lead times, actual lead times, with customer expectations and how well you're meeting them. And if you're not, people will start asking questions, why not? And that will prompt them to start looking at this in progress column. We don't have enough visibility in there. Is it really in progress or is it blocked? Why is it taking too long? Is it finished? Why didn't we pull it into test? Oh, we need more visibility. We should have a done column there so we can see things that are finished and then measure how long they're queuing for testing. Maybe test is a bottleneck. And then someone says, yeah, that's a really good idea. Put the done column on the board and then we'll have more information. You get the outcome you want, but you did it in an oblique way. And That I think is one of the key lessons that's in the new book that you wouldn't find in the old book. I also think it's that the first book was very well written and people loved it, and many people have praised the quality of the writing. But the new book is even better. It's really a work of art that I'm very proud of.
And I guess that since the first book, more than 10 years has passed, more than 10 years of extra experience. And
yeah, it was very daunting to do a new version, because when you have a best-selling book, a book that sold 100,000 copies, and it's really iconic, people refer to it as the Blue Book, to replace that with something else, the bar is very high. The bar for the content, the quality of the writing, even the cover, we had maybe 20, 23 or 24 different cover designs and then several versions of several of them. It took 3 or 4 months to produce the cover for the book. The bar was so high, it was really quite scary to think about replacing it. But I feel that what we have now is, it really is better. And it was a great team achievement, because to produce a book, yes, I did all the writing, but it was a team of people who put it together, the copy editing, the proofreading, the indexing, the layout, the cover design, the graphics, and so on. And the whole team really performed on this one. We're very proud of it.
As you say, the Blue Book is a bestseller, and I guess that the baseline is extremely high, so I can imagine that it must have been very scary to go and change that one, but I'm looking forward. I haven't read the new one yet, but I certainly will. I'm going to be really excited to see what has happened.
Yeah, it's a project that got shelved twice because it was so scary and so daunting. And at one point, I believed it would never be finished. So people will recognize that we published some of the chapters as case studies. So some of the case studies available through our website were edited out of draft chapters. They're not identical, because when you publish it as a case study, it has to be a standalone thing, not in the context of the book. But some of the material got published in smaller versions, because the project took many years. Most recently, I wrote 7 chapters in the last 12 months. But the first 9 chapters of the book had been written several years ago, and the project had been abandoned twice. And I guess towards the end of last year, I realized that I had to make the effort to finish it. I pulled up all the old files and reread it, and I thought, you know, this material's so good, it would be a shame if it's never published. The Kanban Leadership Retreat in 2022, I ran a session where the question was, what do you as a community of Kanban coaches and trainers, what do you need from me? And the number one request was a new book, an update to the Blue Book. And I thought, well, I tried that twice and it's really scary. But towards the end of the year, and my younger daughter was coming over for Christmas, and it was her birthday, she was turning 18 years old. And I thought, you know, this all started with her. It was my birthday, actually, on April 9th, 2005, and she was 3 months old. And that's the day we went to the Imperial Palace Gardens in Tokyo. And I had the epiphany that they were using a Kanban system to manage the park. And I thought, okay, this is a beautiful way to bookend it. So the new book starts with the first page of the book and a picture of my 3-month-old daughter strapped to my chest in the Imperial Palace Gardens in Tokyo. And it ends with her turning 18 at Christmas last year, and my observation that Kanban has come of age.
That's really a great analogy, and what a way to start that book, because I remember very well the pictures from the garden that you have included in the training material, the KMP training material. I think it's absolutely great. I can't wait to read a book, definitely. As we just talked about, there's been many, many new things happening in the Kanban community lately. New books, new Kanban Plus, etc. I guess that the development of Kanban, that will never come to a standstill. But are there any more plans for the future that you might be able to share with us here?
So we talked about the KMM Plus platform and the migration of that to Kanban Plus. That's a core part of our strategy to create online access to all of our content and supporting tooling. So to provide tools, for example, the Fit for Purpose book, there isn't an available tool to create Fit for Purpose surveys. Well, we can provide that. So now that's a key part of our strategy. And recently we launched our Scrum Better with Kanban training for people who've been doing Scrum for a while and it's not delivered everything they hoped for. Well, how can we meet them where they are and help them evolve from there to something better? And we've called the new book series the Better with Kanban book series. So why not project management better with Kanban, product ownership better with Kanban, and so on? So our strategy is to expand that range of offerings to meet people where they are and say, we respect what you've been doing, but you wouldn't be here talking to us if you were completely happy. Something is missing for you and you're looking for that something. We can help you evolve from where you are and find that something better.
Yeah, and then of course it's up to people how far they want to take it. And now, David, to my very last question. Do you have any pieces of advice that you would like to share with the audience concerning Kanban, Flow, Agility, Agile frameworks, or anything else for that matter, other than what we have been talking about so far? I know it's a broad question.
Very, very big, expansive question right at the end. I think, first of all, recognize that the evolution doesn't have an end, but there's a concept of satisficing, that being good enough, that people are satisfied. And a great way to scale, and this is really how Kanban works. Imagine your organization is a network of services, interdependent services. You have a Kanban system for every service. And if you satisfy, if you improve that service to the point where its customers are satisfied that it's good enough, then if all the nodes in the network are satisficing, the likelihood is that the overall scale, at scale, the overall outcome, the whole system is fairly optimized. The opposite would be that you try to optimize individual nodes in the network and you end up with local optimization and a suboptimal large-scale outcome. So focus on being fit for purpose at each node in the network and each Kanban system. Don't try to optimize it. I think that would be good guidance. And maybe the last thing is, for you individually and personally, I think it's important that when you come to a fork in the road, when you come to a decision point and you make a decision, you take one path or another, that you take it and you move forward and you don't have regrets. That with my own career, there's been many points where I've had choices, difficult choices to make, and I have to make a choice and then move on without regrets. It's actually a Yogi Berra saying that when you come to the fork in the road, take it. Now, actually, it was specifically, he was giving people directions to his house, which was out in the country. And if you came through the gate, you would reach a point where the road split in two, going up the hill in the forest. But it was a big loop. So it didn't matter whichever fork you took, you ended up at his house. But it then became this more general piece of advice. When you reach a fork in the road, take it and, you know, go all in and don't have any regrets. And we've made a big difference in the world with Kanban this last 20 years, a big difference in lives and careers and company performance. And while personally I might have had many other choices, I don't regret it at all. And it's been a journey.
Yeah.
Right. But
maybe even a bumpy journey.
Well, absolutely. It's a roller coaster, but I don't have any regrets. So, yeah, you come to a fork in the road, take it.
I'll remember that. I'll surely remember that. And as long as my fork in the road will lead to the Kanban community, I'm really happy. This concludes the third and last episode of this mini-series with David Anderson. Thank you so much, David. It's been such an honor to have you as guest on my show, The Agile Agenda. I cannot thank you enough for taking the time to have this conversation with me and to share your valuable insights with the audience.
Oh, my pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, again, thank you very much, David. And also thank you to the audience for listening. This was a very special episode with a very special guest, and I wish you a warm welcome back next time. I'm Annette Venterbo, and I'm your host on The Agile Agenda.